Hi, I'm Piper.
And I'm Erin.
Welcome to Off the Tracks podcast, where we explore what it means to do law differently.
Today, we are joined by Paula Price. Paula began her career as a lawyer and now runs her own executive coaching business for lawyers. She coaches lawyers at all levels to help them create greater career satisfaction, whether that means developing practice skills to thrive in the job they're in or making a career transition. Paula is also a podcaster and produces a weekly podcast called The Joyful Practice for Women Lawyers, where she shares resources, strategies, and interviews to help lawyers thrive in practice.
So we are so excited to have you here today, Paula. I feel like this has been a long time coming. It's like you are such a wonderful presence and you do such amazing work already with your own podcast, The Joyful Practice for Women Lawyers. And so to get your perspective on the other side of the mic on our show today is just so exciting. So Paula, we always love to hear, you know, from our guests themselves a little bit about how their career has evolved and how they've gotten to where they are, because we totally recognize that there's no linear pathway to any one success. And we'd love to hear a little bit about, you know, how you ended up as an executive coach for lawyers.
Thank you so much, Piper. And thank you, Piper. Thank you, Erin. I am so honored to be here today speaking on your podcast. I'll be honest, it feels very odd to be on the opposite side of the interviewer conversation. And we were just talking before we started recording about how I'm excited to have you as guests. So this is going to be really fun. And to answer your question, Piper, it is, it's such a great question. And I realized today, as I was writing an email about how long I've been in the legal industry, it's been over 20 years. And so you can imagine it has not been a linear path. It is not one decision that made or broke any one particular aspect of it. And I think, you know, I graduated law school back in 2003. I articled on Bay Street. After articles, I moved to Vancouver, where I'm from. I worked at an insurance litigation boutique for about a year, and then I transitioned to a larger firm, a national firm here in Vancouver. And I practiced there for, I think, about a dozen years before reaching the point where I wanted to make a transition. And so that was a point where I kind of went from practicing law as a lawyer in a fairly traditional way to breaking out of that, that mold, if you will, and starting my coaching practice. And from there, I got trained as an executive coach. There was a period where I straddled coaching and lawyering, and now I'm pretty much exclusively coaching. I do some work still as a non-practicing lawyer, and primarily I'm coaching lawyers and doing my podcast and speaking. And that's kind of the trajectory from the bird's eye view. And in terms of how those decisions got made along the way, again, taking that bird's eye perspective, and if you want to go into any particular element of it, please let me know, because with it being 20 plus years, I'm not really sure which of those years is the most important to focus on. But there have been twists and turns along the way. And as you mentioned, career paths aren't necessarily linear. And this is a topic that comes up a lot with clients that I work with when they're talking about their own career decisions, that we're constantly navigating almost like a sailboat that is tacking. You're not necessarily going in the direction of your destination. You're always kind of approaching it at an angle. And as long as you keep pivoting and course correcting, ultimately you get to where you want to go, but it's not necessarily a straight line.
That is an excellent way to put it. Thanks for sharing, Paula. So we would, I guess, love to zero in a bit more on the decision to go to law school and why you decided to become a lawyer in the first place, and maybe a bit more about how you use your non-practicing lawyer status these days too.
Yeah, of course. You know, my decision to go to law school, I think it was informed by a number of different factors. I finished my undergrad as I had an arts degree in international relations. I was very interested in travel. I had gone on an exchange during my undergrad to Grenoble in France. I'd spent a gap year in Switzerland working as a nanny. While I was there, I was very close to Geneva. I worked for a family where the mother was an international lawyer. She had this fascinating background where she'd done all this work with the International Red Cross. And I was just really interested in learning more about how I could do that type of work. And when it came down to it, in my last year of undergrad, I researched my options. I applied to a number of different law schools. I wrote my LSATs. I also applied to a graduate program in Geneva for international relations. And I found myself making a decision at the end of the year, right? Looking at the options, I got into the graduate program. It looked really appealing. I got into various law schools. And ultimately, the decision to go to law school was really motivated by the idea of wanting to have an international presence, like having a job where I'd be working with people from different backgrounds, different countries, different nationalities. And I was accepted to McGill, and I thought that's a wonderful place to pursue this. It itself is in a bilingual city in Canada, as you know, and it had a strong international community within the law school. And so it seemed like a really good opportunity, a good platform. I thought law, as compared to, for example, a graduate program, had the appeal of having a specific skill. My mother referred to it as a marketable skill, I believe. And so it was this idea that I could go and do a program, a professional program. And at the end of it, I would have a skill that I could use in a number of different capacities. It hadn't really occurred to me when I applied to law school that I would ever work in a law firm. I always imagined myself more like this woman that I had worked for, right, on some sort of an international organization. And that was what really motivated that initial decision to go to law school. And Erin, you asked about how I continue to use my law degree in a non-practicing capacity. So I currently work for a nonprofit here in Vancouver. It's called the People's Law School, and they provide and produce legal information for the public focused on helping people solve their everyday legal problems. And so they brought me on board just before the pandemic, which was really coincidental timing because my role there is producing webinars. And so you can imagine how that really took off because the organization had been doing in-person training, in-person legal education events. I remember going to one to see what it was like. I went to a library near where I live. I had to battle through the snow to get there. And yet there were dozens of people at the library wanting to learn about wills. That was the topic of the day. And seeing what impact that had on individuals who wanted to learn more about, in that case, wills and understand better what the legal issues were for them. And so I was brought on to do webinars, and what ended up happening was the world shut down and in-person was no longer an option. And we were able to use that online platform, the webinar style platform, to reach so many people. We ended up fast-tracking our program. We weren't originally going to start producing until April, but or maybe it was later, it might have been May. Anyhow, we initiated that program by bringing Sarah Forte on, who you may know. She's a lawyer based out of Surrey, BC. And she's an employment lawyer, and so many people were struggling with their jobs. And so we were able to create a webinar that addressed some of the issues that everyday British Columbians were having about their jobs. What are we doing in this pandemic? What does this mean? What does this mean for our benefits, et cetera? And so we were able to provide this information in a way that was accessible to so many people. And then the recordings of those webinars go online and become ongoing evergreen resources for people who have questions about these particular topics. So that's how I'm currently using my law degree in a non-practicing status, is I basically help to identify what some of the most salient issues are. What do people have questions about? I help identify practicing lawyers who can speak to the topics. And then I, much like we're doing now, set up an interview, that's the style of the webinars, to ask common everyday questions. What do people want to know? And elicit those answers in a way that is conversational and accessible and provides that information to the public. So that's what I'm doing over there. And it's a fabulous team and I love the work.
Paula, that's so interesting because I think you really, in the career that you've paved, you have the opportunity to, you know, use so many of your amazing skill sets, whether that's doing public legal education or running your own business or running your own podcast. I feel like you've carved this path for yourself that lets you use I'm going to go out on a limb and say probably some of your most favorite skills. And that's so exciting to create, you know, a joyful practice, as one would say. So Paula, something that we're curious about is early in your career, you joined a law firm and you were there for a little over a decade. And making a career transition when you've been somewhere for quite a significant amount of time can definitely be really scary. And it can feel like such a leap, regardless of, you know, the motivations for the transition. And so at that stage in your career, Paula, how did you decide to make a change and what were some of your motivations?
Thank you so much, Piper. It's such a great question. And, you know, I think it is really, really challenging. I think what happened for me around that period of my life was, number one, I was practicing as a commercial litigator, and there are elements of litigation that I absolutely love. I love the connection with the law. I love the research. I love the writing. I love the puzzle solving. I love having a window into other people's problems and helping them to solve them. But the adversarial nature of that type of practice never felt right to me. I always really struggled with that side of it. And what ended up happening was kind of a mix of events. And part of that was I had children. And so, you know, I had one child and went back to work after that. And it was pretty much business as usual. I'd adjusted my role from full-on litigation to more research and certain types of court applications. And that worked really well for a while. And then my daughter came along and I reduced my schedule to 80%. And I found that it was increasingly difficult to manage. My husband works out of town. And so I have a fairly rigorous schedule Monday to Thursday in terms of being basically exclusively responsible for the kids. So if somebody has pink eye, then I'm staying home with them. And this was pre-pandemic. So the option of staying home and that being normal wasn't really there. So it was quite stressful on days where I'd have to organize last minute childcare, et cetera. So there was this, the practice that I was in was becoming increasingly difficult for me to execute. Another factor there is also time, right? Even in my current role now, I love working. Like I love it. And so I'm always trying to figure out how I can, it sounds crazy, but do more of it. And so when I was a lawyer, I had no issue doing longer hours. I like that. I love that. It helped me with my learning. I liked the pace of it. But when you need to be at home at 4:30 or 5 or 6 to let the nanny go home, you can't do that anymore. So some of the practice habits that I developed were no longer doable in my new world. And when your kids are really young, I didn't really have that option of doing work after putting them to bed. I was too tired. And so on the one hand, the system I had was no longer really working. And on the other hand, what was happening is while I was on break at mat leave with my second child, I ended up signing up for this online coaching program. I won't go into the details of it, but suffice it to say, it was this online virtual program where I could kind of get support. I was trying to, it sounds really silly, but kind of get back into shape after having two kids. And I appreciated having this, this resource that I could check in with, and I'd tell them my steps for the day and they'd be like, good job getting all those steps. And I found it really motivating. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if you had something like this that could help you in your professional work, like a coach, somebody who was out there supporting you, cheering you on from the sidelines. And so I Googled lawyer coach, and it turns out a lawyer coach is a thing that exists. I found some lawyer coaches. I started researching them and I started researching other coaches, and I increasingly became totally obsessed with the world of coaching. And so on the one hand, there was a push in the sense that I was no longer feeling completely aligned with the work that I was doing. And on the other hand, I had this increasingly growing curiosity about coaching and how I could apply that. Not only, like, I was thinking about it in my own practice, but then also to the practice of the people who were around me. And Piper, you mentioned earlier how the work that I do now really aligns, right? The People's Law School work, the work that I'm doing through my coaching, through the speaking, the podcasting, and all of that. And I wouldn't say that I started out wanting to do public speaking. I'm kind of an introvert. I kind of tried to avoid all those things before, But when I started making the decision of transitioning into a coach, there were a few factors that I knew I wanted to follow or adhere to. And one of them was accessibility, right? I was learning about coaching and I thought, this is such a great tool. This is such a great resource. I know so many lawyers who have challenges, who are struggling, who don't really know where to go. It's not necessarily a therapy question. It's not necessarily something that they feel comfortable talking to one of their colleagues about. And so I saw this window for coaching as being something that I wanted other people to have access to. So access was part of it. I wanted to help people in a way that was anonymous. I knew that for some people, they might not want to have that person-to-person interaction. They might just want to be kind of like me, lurking from the sidelines, seeing what they could find on YouTube. And so I wanted to make it a program that you didn't have to necessarily show yourself or reveal your own challenges. You could kind of listen and learn and then apply it to your own. And then affordability was a big thing. I remember reaching out for coaching and thinking, ooh, can I really justify this type of expense? I've got two kids, you know, we have a nanny, like, can I really put a coaching on top of it? That's so self-indulgent or whatever. And so I wanted to make it affordable. So when you look at the work that I do now, there are these common themes. Like if you look at the People's Law School work, it's aligned, right? It's making legal information accessible, affordable. You can do it anonymously. And same with the coaching. I try to make the coaching something that is available, it's accessible. And I also want to normalize the conversation around needing support, whether it's coaching or counseling or therapy or increased mentorship. And what I've noticed over the past 5 years, because that's basically as long as I've been in this, is that we are increasingly, I think, talking about these things. I think the pandemic, for all the things that it brought that were negative, some of the positives were that it opened the door to these discussions. We were all sort of struggling with one big change, a lot of uncertainty all at the same time. And so people were really voicing their concerns about mental health and how it was affecting them on an individual level. And I think it also, for me personally, what I found impactful was that it also leveled the playing field between people who had kids at home and people who did not, because all of a sudden this concept of working from home and having, you know, your kid in the background or acknowledging that you had to be at home working that day because you had to take your daughter to a doctor's appointment or whatever, all of a sudden that was so normal, right? When I first left practice back in 2017, 2018, this idea of working from home was very much an outlier type of thing. It wasn't very common. And I feel like now it's so much more common, and that just makes it more doable for people who need flexibility to actually execute their professional work and do it in a way that just feels normal. So I feel like I've been talking a lot, so I'll stop.
No, you've been doing great. We love your answer. So thank you for sharing that. I think that's a really interesting way to think about it. It's like, yeah, you can go to a therapist to talk about your mental health, and you may talk to your colleagues about the current challenges you're facing with your current work, but I feel like coaching kind of fills that in between where you need a little bit of guidance and a little bit of direction. And we would love to know a bit more from you. What drew you to start Up-Level Lawyer Coaching and Up-Level CPD? And if you have any tips, sorry, multifaceted questions here, but if you have any tips for those who are, you know, thinking that coaching might be something they're interested in, what kinds of things they might look for in a coach or a program like the ones that you offer as well?
Beautiful. I think there's a few questions in there, so I'm going to try to answer them. And if I miss something, please let me know. First, picking up on what you mentioned, Erin, about the gap that is filled by a coach, the way that I see that particular gap is that there are opportunities that you might want to pursue, and you feel like you don't really know where to start. You don't necessarily have the support to do that. And that is one of the really fun places where you can bring in a coach, right? You have this big lofty goal and you can find somebody who can actually help, who will sit there and help you figure out how you're going to do it and help you navigate the plan, but also the challenges that come along with that. I think coaches also play a role kind of the flip side, where there's a challenge, right? Where there's a real struggle and you think, I don't really know how to resolve this. I feel like I need support for this. But as you were saying, you don't really know which resource is the best one to go to. So that's the role that I see coaches playing. And I think what really drew me to coaching was really was those two sides, right? I love the idea that we all have this potential to do work in the world, professional work, our personal lives, whatever it is. And I think sometimes we fall into a certain pattern or habit and we don't see ourselves as having capacity to go beyond that. And when you work with somebody whose job is to sit there and see you at your highest potential and to help you get there, that to me is one of the most exciting things that I get to do in the privileged position that I have of coaching other people. So that's kind of filling that gap. And I think what you were asking is, why did I do up-level lawyer coaching? Why up-level CPD? It is to do that, right? I wanted to create a coaching program for lawyers. And so I have niched, as they say, and I work exclusively with lawyers. And it's been really interesting because now I'm 5 years into my practice. And so I'm starting to see some themes. I think the themes that lawyers come to me most frequently for are transitions. And so lawyers who are struggling, they're so smart, they're talented, they're doing well or not. Maybe sometimes they're struggling in their particular role, but they are so capable and they're trying to figure out, you know, where do I go from here? Because law, it's like a label and you have these certain ideas of what law is. I think law is becoming increasingly flexible and innovative as a profession, but you may be in a really traditional environment where you don't necessarily see that. You don't have access to that. And so what I've noticed is that lawyers come to me, they are interested in making a transition. And so I can help them through that. Or practice management is another challenge that lawyers have. I mean, with a billable hour, with multiple files, multiple clients, busy lives to lead. And nobody really teaches you how to practice or manage your practice. As far as I know, it's not a law school course yet. And so just figuring out how you're going to manage this volume of work in a way that allows you to have some peace around your schedule. So you're not constantly feeling like you're putting out fires and running around in a reactive mode. So those are two of the areas where I probably hear from the most lawyers. Other areas are transitions, post-parent. So after parental leave, coming back and figuring out how you want to do that. Leadership coaching, so lawyers who are transitioning into a leadership role and wanting some assistance there. So those are the things that lawyers come to me for. I love coaching with them on that. And so I do that through my up-level lawyer coaching. And then the CPD, that's more of the professional development part. And so I've experimented with different trainings and that has been really fun. I've done courses for law students. So bridging the transition from law school to law firm, again, there are a host of skills that you don't necessarily learn in a law school environment that are relevant to a law firm environment. So a lot of these soft skills like time management, professionalism, feedback, speaking, writing, helping lawyers bridge that gap, make that transition. At the moment, I'm running a group course, which is my first one, and it's super, super fun. I've got a group of 8 women lawyers from across Canada, and we're doing a 6-month group coaching program, and we've got a theme for every month. We are, this month, we're talking about obstacles, you know, how what stands in the way is the way. And so we had our course earlier today. It was incredible. It's absolutely incredible. Just the energy of these women in our Zoom room, right? It's absolutely amazing. And so it's me trying to find innovative ways to bring coaching to lawyers to figure out how best to serve. What are some of the different formats of doing this, combinations of training, speaking, coaching? I also am invited to speak to, yesterday I spoke to a group of law students at the university, helping them prepare for a networking event. Things like, you know, what is the basic etiquette when you enter a ballroom and you're there for a formal dinner, and what's the appropriate dress code? And they asked me about these dress codes. There were 5 or 6 different dress codes. And so just decoding what each of them mean, if you haven't been working in a law firm for 10 years, you may not understand the differences and the nuances. And so I find there's so much opportunity just to, again, provide access to information that is so helpful. And when you have that information, you're empowered, you know what to do. If you don't have that information, it's like, there's just a gap. It's hard to move forward. So Erin, I love your question and I hope I'm answering. I think the last part of it is, what do you do if you're someone who wants to become a coach or someone who wants to work with a coach? Is that right?
Yeah, you're nailing it. Your memory, it's like a memory test and you're just absolutely killing it.
Thank you. You're amazing. And I love your questions and I love being here. So thank you. So if you want to work with a coach, I think that's probably the first question in my mind, in the sense that I would investigate. I'd look up people on their websites. I'd ask for referrals. I'd see, are there any published materials? Have they written blog? Have they, you know, I have a podcast, so, you know, maybe there's a podcast. Do you align with that person? Do you see something in that person that you like? Do you trust them? Would you want to work with them? So maybe make your short list and then interview. Most coaches, I think, will have an interview, a consult, a free coaching session, whatever they happen to call it. And then you can ask about what programs they offer, if they offer programs that they do, sort of a la carte type of coaching, what kind of price point is it? And those are some of the steps that I would take in terms of the actual logistics. Bigger than that, if you want to work with a coach, I would ask yourself questions like, what is it that I'm hoping to get out of this coaching relationship? Because ultimately, whoever it is that helps to facilitate whatever it is that you are trying to achieve, they really are there as a catalyst, as an agent for the change that you're seeking to make. And ultimately, the clearer you are going into it in terms of what you hope to achieve, the more successful I think your experience of working with a coach is going to be. And your coach will help you to get clarity on what that goal might be. But if you have in your mind's eye what you want from that coach, what type of support would be good for you? Do you want somebody who's going to challenge you, someone who's going to cheer you on? Is it that you want feedback? Do you want someone to point out your blind spots? The clearer you can be about where you're going and the kind of support you need, the easier it'll be for you to find a good fit. So that's kind of category one, looking for a coach. Category two, if you want to become a coach, I think it involves, you know, the same analysis I'd recommend for a lawyer who's looking to make a transition, is to really take a step back and look at what your values are. What kind of career do you want to have? Do you want an entrepreneurial lifestyle? I think most coaches that I know are working kind of like me, right? They're doing it independently, which is one way of life. I think that there are increasingly organizations and some law firms. I know of one in the US that has a full-time coach, but at the moment, I don't know that most firms don't have an in-house person who is dedicated to coaching. There's roles that will have coaching as maybe a component of it mixed in with a whole bunch of other roles. And so you kind of need to look at what package or what container you want to offer your coaching from. So what does that look like? Do you want to coach, right? Do you have an interest in the type of work that is involved in coaching? So you might hire a coach just to see what that experience is like. And do you like that experience? Could you see yourself on the other side of that conversation? There are some really amazing coaching programs. I mean, some people get coach training simply because they want to go through the program. And I did the Royal Roads program. I think, Piper, when you asked me a question earlier, you talked about how difficult it is to transition. And moving from lawyer to coach was terrifying. And one of the things that made it a little bit less terrifying was when I had my first week of coach training, it was in person. It was at Royal Roads University in Victoria. And we had, the first week was in person. We met our cohorts. We went through all these fabulous coach trainings. And I knew when I was there, like just the feeling, even now talking about it, the feeling of being in that room, it's like a full body yes. Like this is exactly where I'm supposed to be. So if you start doing that type of training and you feel like this is exactly what I'm meant to do, then you kind of have your answer. And if it's not, then you have your answer. And if you do choose to go down the route of becoming a coach, I think you might want to prepare yourself as you would if you were going to become a sole practitioner as a lawyer, and perhaps even more so because you're not going from lawyer to lawyer, you know, maybe with a firm to lawyer on your own. Still, you're going to have to build up clients. But when you start fresh as a coach, you really are starting from the ground up. So having a plan, having ideas about how you're going to bridge that gap, how, you know, what kind of income are you seeking to make and how are you going to make that work? I think it helps not to have a lot of pressure on yourself at the beginning, because I mean, when I started, I had, you know, a client here and there. Now my practice is much more regular, but it's taken me 5 years of being out there and actively speaking and meeting people and coaching and sort of building up a referral network. So it's not an easy route if you're not inclined to do it. For me, I don't think I'm a natural born entrepreneur, but it was a kind of price of admission. When I knew I wanted to coach, I decided I'll do all the things that I have to do, which included speaking and writing and getting out there and really taking that initiative. So those are some of the suggestions I would have. And of course, reach out to coaches, see what their experience has been, talk to them, see how they like their work, ask them what they do, and find out if it's something that's for you.
Paula, that's so fascinating. You've touched a little bit on throughout all of your answers about, you know, this concept of alignment. And something that I think about when we talk about transitions is obviously transitions are always motivated by different things. Some people are motivated by fear or by burnout or by personal life changes, or just they're seeking that thing that is a full body yes. And so I know that, you know, you work with people and help them find that alignment in their career of what that next transition is going to be, to make sure that the transition is motivated for all of the good, right reasons and that they're doing it at the right time. And so when you think about those transitions and creating alignment in your career, how can someone, when they work with you, what are some of the things that you really try and encourage people to think about when thinking about like a career as a whole, as opposed to like a snap decision in maybe trying to leave a bad situation or trying to get to something better faster? Because I feel like, you know, we're in this day and age of instantaneous everything, instantaneous communication, instantaneous, you order food, it's at your door 15 minutes later, like everything is so instant. And sometimes I really like the phrase, you have to go slow to go fast. And so when you're looking at a career as a whole, how can you sort of go slow to go fast and find that alignment?
Such a beautiful question. It is so good. And there's so many layers to that, Piper. Holy smokes. I think there's different places where you can start. And where I typically start with clients who are looking to transition is with a pretty granular analysis of kind of taking stock of where they are based on the past. And that involves looking at their current work and teasing out what they like about it, their strengths, what their values are. So that might be the first time ever that somebody is actually going through those exercises. And that to me is really the starting point for finding alignment. Because if you haven't done that work, if you don't know yourself well enough, then it's going to be really hard to create alignment. And I think for a lot of lawyers, it's they can fall into a situation where they are out of alignment because what they've done to that point is look at external cues. And so you get into law school, you get good grades, you get into law school, you take your prerequisite courses that you need to graduate, you go to a law firm, you join the group that seems to make the most sense. And so, and then you kind of follow sometimes a lockstep. It depends on your career path, but if you've taken a path that is very much informed by the external benchmarks, the check marks, then it can be really hard to know what your internal ones are because you've never really asked yourself those questions. So from a immediate standpoint, that's exactly where I start with clients, is getting stock of those things. We also take stock of the things that you don't like. And the reason is that you kind of just want to know what those things are so that you don't necessarily put yourself into a position where you're doing more of that. And there's a notion called appreciative inquiry. It's something that I learned about in my coach training, which is this idea of building on strengths. And it's used sometimes in the context of an organization where you're dealing with systems and you're trying to fix a problem. And so fixing a problem is kind of one way of looking at it. Appreciative inquiry is where you build on strengths. And the theory is that as long as you're building on the strengths, the problem itself will fall away. And if you're fixing a problem, you're focused on the problem. And so you're never necessarily going to go beyond that, right? You might fix what exists, but you're not going to innovate to that next level. And so I think for all of us who are looking at our careers, looking at what we love, what we value, where we're strong, and building on that, the more that we can pull that into our work, whatever that happens to be, the more we're going to find connection with it, enjoyment, fulfillment, and alignment. Now, that's kind of looking at it in the short run. But I think what would be interesting, Piper, given your question, is if you're looking at it from the perspective of when you're done. And sometimes I'll talk to clients about the question of legacy, not everybody, because I don't think everybody really has the desire necessarily, or the interest in looking at it from that perspective. But what you can ask yourself is, you know, depending on where you are now. So for me, I look maybe 30 years out. I think, how old am I now? Yeah, probably around 30 years, maybe longer, because I plan to do this for a while. What do I want my legacy to be, right? What is the impact that I want to have created in the world through my professional work? And when I force myself to answer that question, then I start to get some pretty good clues about what I might be doing today in order to reach that goal, in order to have that legacy. And that can be really motivating because, you know, the short term can be pretty painful. One of my goals for my legacy is that I want to be able to build community. And it sounds so beautiful in the abstract, right? To leave behind a community of professional women lawyers who are all thriving, who support each other, like that in my mind's eye would be the bee's knees. That would be the ultimate legacy. But to get there means that in the short term, that means a lot of individual tasks, sometimes ones that are really challenging, sometimes they're super uncomfortable and I don't want to do them. In the moment, you know, to that point of, you know, being that sort of, you know, the here and now, the instant gratification, a lot of the steps that you take, you're not going to see the impact for a long time, right? And so I think having in your mind's eye where you want to go, what is the ultimate legacy that you want to create, can help to pull you forward as you're going through some of those more difficult steps that are in the present. So Piper, yeah, it's such a beautiful question. I'm not sure I've completed it, but is there anything that I left out or any questions about that?
No, Paula, that was you, like, as Erin said earlier, you have such an amazing memory.
You thank you.
You absolutely covered all of it.
Thank you so much. I'm feeling like so flattered and much more confident about my memory. Thank you. It's not always this sharp.
No.
Believe me, ask my kids. I can barely remember. They ask for Crispix and I give them checks and they're, Mom, I asked for Crispix. I'm like, sorry, I forgot. So thank you. I'll bring this up next time I make my inevitable errors.
I love it. So just one thing I was thinking, and I know Piper was thinking about it too, is just as you're talking, it's like, okay, that's great. You know, think about the horizon and you know, finding the space to think about innovative ways to fix the problems that you're facing. And I guess it's kind of tied to a burnout question, kind of tied to sort of how you find that space, because I know for me, it's really easy to get stuck on the day-to-day just hamster wheel where you're just like, oh yes, I will get through my to-do list today. And then tomorrow I'll think about future planning, or I'll think about fixing these friction points in my business. Or, I mean, I've had it on my to-do list since October to fix my questionnaire for my intake. And, you know, you think, oh yes, I'll get to that, you know, when things slow down or when I have a moment to catch my breath. And, you know, inevitably those moments don't come often. And when you do, you're usually just exhausted and want to curl up on the couch anyways. So I guess, you know, in a space where a lot of lawyers are burnt out and just struggling to get through each day, what would your suggestion be to sort of start to carve out that space where you can have that mind space to start thinking about these innovative solutions?
Such a great question. Thank you so much, Erin. And a tough one to answer, I think. I think we all have those items on the to-do list. For me, it was my taxes. I finally sat down on Sunday. My husband took the kids out and I spent 5 hours. It didn't take that long, right? I mean, to fix your form probably is a few hours, but when you have such a busy life, carving that time out feels so difficult. So, I mean, there are time management strategies that I could recommend in terms of, you know, raising the task on the priority level, carving out that time. And that might work, right? It might help if you had a practice of, you know, Saturday mornings, or every, you know, the first Saturday of every month. Will you stick to it? I don't know. In a sense, that's one of the areas where I think having a coach is really helpful, because, and maybe it's not a coach, maybe it's a counselor, maybe it's a friend, maybe it's somebody. I don't mean for it to be like I'm a coach, so hire a coach. But I work with coaches, and that is one of the reasons why. You know, when I started the podcast, I hired a coach because it was exactly that problem, right? Where I know on my own, I'm not going to set aside the time to do it. But if I make that investment, then I will stick to it. Same thing with my program last year. I joined this mastermind program and it was crazy, but it was what I needed to help me take that next step, to kind of force me almost to reserve that time. So I think part of it is finding a way that works for you. Like what is so that motivates me. It might not motivate somebody else, but what is a way that is motivating for you to actually carve out that time? Like, what do you need to do to actually have that chunk of time on your calendar and then stick to it? Now, when it comes to, so that works up until a point. I think if you're in that zone of burnout and you are truly struggling, just trying to make it through the week, and when the week wraps up, you really just don't have the bandwidth to step back and think about it. I think getting support, really, like probably a counselor or therapist, somebody just to help with the burnout and whatever emotional aspects are going on there, because we all have that at some point where it's just overwhelm. And so having some support to work your way through that and to start just carving out that time to take control back over your life. Again, it can be a coach, right? You might find, okay, I want to work with somebody to really figure out how I'm not going to feel so burned out all the time, how I'm going to get more control of my schedule, how I'm going to set more boundaries, how I'm going to deal with all of this. Sometimes it means bringing in other types of help, like support, people that you can delegate some of your tasks to. If you can delegate work tasks, that's one thing. Sometimes it might be home tasks. If you find you're overwhelmed on two fronts, you might need to hire extra help at home or find, you know, cut some corners here and there. And then in some cases, when it's truly that burnout phase, sometimes it is a break away from what it is you're doing. I have lawyers who ask me this question about, you know, should I take a stress leave? Should I take time off? Should I quit my job and just give myself a window of space so that I can think about it? And I think the concern there is, well, am I going to limit my opportunities going forward? If I do something like that, will other people judge me? And, you know, I don't know the answer to that. I think, you know, I've heard other people talk about taking disability and decisions around, you know, do I disclose or do I not disclose? And so I think it really is up to the individual in terms of what is comfortable for you. If you are thinking that people might judge you, who are those people? And are they people that you're concerned about? Are they people that you would want to work for? Or is that a category of person that you're not necessarily interested in that type of work? And so I think there are a number of factors that come into play, and it's such an individual decision. But can you take time off and then go back and have a successful career? Absolutely. I've seen other people do it. And can you have a leave and then go back to work successfully? Absolutely. I've seen people do it. And so there are a lot of different options that are available, and they range from, you know, kind of that tinkering with your time management all the way up to taking a leave and figuring out what it is that you want to do. And I think it's for the individual to try to do that and to get started. I think just the minimum viable step, right? Like, I think if someone in that position is trying to overhaul their entire, you know, if you're trying to go from burned out and overwhelmed and, you know, wanting to quit your job to super happy and in control of your schedule, and you don't give yourself a window of time to make that transition, then that isn't going to work, right? It's an unrealistic goal that you're setting for yourself. And so I think giving yourself little tiny pieces of little tiny habits that you can start building, and then building on each little success until you reach that point where you feel like you've got that confidence and control and maybe the capacity to make an informed decision. So I think it's a tricky place to be. And again, hopefully that answer is helpful. I think different aspects of that will resonate on different individuals, depending on where they see themselves in terms of the range of burnout and desire to do something different.
Yeah, that is super helpful. And thank you again for sort of walking us through all these tips and tricks and, you know, reminding us that we don't have to do this alone, that there are professionals who do this and who have a whole toolbox. You know, sometimes just like in therapy, you know, when I was dealing with anxiety, it was like, okay, I don't know what to do with my anxiety. That's when I went to my therapist, and you help come up with a toolbox of different tools you can access when you're feeling overwhelmed with anxiety or depression or whatever you're dealing with. And so just like that, it sounds like you can go to a coach and they will have a toolbox that they can, you know, open and show you and say, hey, you know, you're dealing with these issues. You want to work on these aspects of your life and your career. And here's some tools that you may not have even thought of yet. Or even if you have, maybe you're having trouble sticking to it on your own. And just a great reminder that, you know, you don't have to have it all together on your own, that you can outsource help and get support in these respects. So thank you so much for sharing all of this wisdom today. We have so enjoyed having you here. I was going to try to go on with like my toolbox analogy for a little bit there. And then I was like, I'm like notorious for just absolutely killing a joke, like just like, and it's like, it's not even funny anymore. And so I'll let it die.
No, I love it. And Erin, I think what you said, you do not have to do it alone. Like you do not have to do it alone. You are not the only person. I mean, if anybody is struggling with any of this, they are not alone. I think that can be really validating. Some of the lawyers that I speak to, you know, I've said this before, but it's like, we're all looking at other people's highlight reels on LinkedIn or Facebook or wherever you have your social media feeds, or even out in the real world, people never really seem to expose any chinks in the armor, any weaknesses, any lacks of confidence. And so I think sometimes just hearing from somebody like a professional who sees challenges day in, day out, to say, you're not alone. This is completely normal. And we can figure out a path through. Just knowing that, I think, offers so much relief. So I think that's a really key takeaway for anybody, is that you don't have to do it alone, right? There are lots of people out there, including friends, family, colleagues, mentors who do want to support you. So absolutely.
Paula, we are so, so grateful that you have joined us today. We always love to end the podcast with the same question, which is, what is something new that you have learned recently?
Piper, this has been so much fun. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you, Erin. It truly is an honor. I'm so, so, so thrilled. And you prepared me for this question. So I actually had to reach for a book, because we had the prep questions, and the first thing that came to mind in terms of things that I've learned recently, it's a little bit of a, it's almost a quote. It comes from a book called The Obstacle is the Way, The Ancient Art of Turning Adversity to Advantage. It's by Ryan Holiday. And I was reading it the other night, and there's a description in this book about John D. Rockefeller. And they were talking about him, and, you know, there's the Rockefeller Tower. He's, you know, this successful businessman from, I guess, the late 1800s, early 1900s. And there was this passage where they talk about him and how he negotiated all these really big kind of world crises, like the 1929 Depression, for example. And they talked about how, and I'm just kind of looking over at my book, but he had this self-discipline and objectivity, and he had the strength to resist temptation or excitement, no matter how seductive, no matter the situation. So this is how they're describing him. And then there's this sentence where they say, for the rest of his life, the greater the chaos, the calmer Rockefeller would become, particularly when others around him were either panicked or mad with greed. And when I read this, it was kind of like a light bulb moment, because I thought, that is so interesting, that it's possible for your response, if you're in a situation where it's chaos around you. I mean, my normal reaction is usually to get a little bit worked up. I mean, there's times where I'll go into that deep focus. Like, I remember at work sometimes there'd be a big crisis and I'd, you know, have to really focus and get calm and settled. But, you know, if my kids are getting riled up, chances are I'm going to get riled up right along with them. And so this idea that you can be, that you can almost train yourself to default into calm and focus and peace when the world outside you is chaos, was kind of an eye opener for me. And so I've been thinking about that and how I could apply that in various aspects of my life. And so I just thought that was a really neat concept. And so I thought I would share that with you and with your amazing listeners.
Paula, that is fantastic. We always love hearing what people are reading. And then Erin and I tend to go jot the books down. And then in my case, at least, I today got another email from the library saying, oh, like your hold is ready. Your hold is ready. And then I say to myself, why did you put so many books on hold? Like, when do you think you are reading all of these books that the library is now emailing you, telling you that they're available for pickup? So I would love to say I will add that to my list, but I will add that to a very, very future list. and just accept the sage wisdom from you today, the synthesizing of it today. Paula, thank you. This has been a true joy for us. We so appreciate the work that you do, and the content that you put out for people. And I think it just really goes to show like who you are as a person and who you are as a coach, and anyone interested in working with you can go and listen to the Joyful Practice for Women Lawyers to get a better sense, even beyond this episode, of who you are and what you do and how you approach challenging conversations and different obstacles and really just your approach to working with others and helping them reach their fullest, most joyful potential. So thank you for sharing just a sprinkle of your magic with us today. And we are so excited to join you in a very future episode of the Joyful podcast.
The Joyful Practice for Women Lawyers podcast. Piper, thank you so much. And Erin, thank you so much. And absolutely right back at you. I love the work that you do. I love the podcast that you have. I love the guests that you bring on. And I think you are doing a fabulous job of creating, again, something that's accessible. It is affordable. It is something that people can listen to anonymously and learn about all these different lawyers who are doing different things out there in the world. And they can see themselves in these other lawyers and learn from them and be inspired by them and by you. So thank you for having me on. Thank you for the work that you're doing. I think it's absolutely incredible. So much, much, much appreciated.
Thanks so much, Paula. Until next time.
Beautiful.
Thanks for joining us for this episode. To stay up to date with the podcast, follow us on Instagram at Off the Tracks Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite listening platform for a brand new episode of Off the Tracks Podcast every Tuesday.